You're listening to Making It with John Davids.
Andre, welcome to the podcast.
You're very welcome and nice to be here, John.
It's a pleasure. Why don't you tell us about your company and the problem you're trying to solve right now?
With pleasure, John. It's nice to speak to you, and it's interesting. I'm podcasting here from Cape Town, South Africa, recently voted the second best city in the world to live in. Go figure. We sit in an emerging market, but with lots of first world requests and challenges. And what we do is we build the marketplace platforms for large audience players to be able to drive traffic from a digital platform to offline conversion. So we drive traffic in-store. We like to call it the Shopify for bricks and mortar retail, because the emerging markets, Africa, Asia, Latin America, the e-commerce is a very small percentage of the market. Most of Africa is less than 2%. However, 60% of people are using digital and mobile to try and find something online. So how do you cross that bridge? Well, you use large audiences. So we work with telcos and banks and challenger banks and neobanks. And we build the platforms to be able to find a product, but not an online product. We find an offline product. And then we drive traffic in store and everything else that goes with it, payments and loyalties and everything else that the layers that fit on that is how we pull this thing together.
And so the problem, if I'm understanding it, the challenge that you're having is that you're in a market where the consumer is not used to buying online, or they're not in the habit of buying online like they would be in the US. And so are you really trying to pioneer the market here and get people to behave in a different way?
Somewhat, yes. Behave in a different way. Interestingly enough, their behavior is there, but the pieces of the puzzle are not together. So people will look on mobile. So it's a mobile-only continent. So what one must do is take the thinking of a desktop or a laptop out of your picture, okay? All 99% of people are on mobile, and they live and work and survive on mobile. So you're going to use that. The beauty about that is it brings you all the benefits of mobile with geolocation and everything else that goes with. So there's the interesting link to that. What differs from established markets, Amazon kind of rules the market there, and you know, you go into your desktop and you shop for stuff, and you'll either have it delivered later this afternoon or tomorrow. That's the general thinking and or deliverable consensus, which you don't get in Africa because the logistical distances are too far. In our country, for example, the postal system is completely destroyed. You can chuck something in the mail today and it'll arrive somewhere 3 weeks later. And this is a normal letter. Delivery logistics, if I ordered something from the other capital in South Africa or one of the other big cities, from Johannesburg, and you want to deliver it in Cape Town, it's going to fly here. So that's going to take 2 or 3 days. It's going to be more expensive. But all of these products are available in your local and immediate vicinity. Everybody goes to a shop. They go to a shopping center. They go to a retail space. But they use digital to find the things. COVID taught us all to use digital to find things. But what we're going to do now is cross this bridge to be able to get to what's then, to be able to get what is offline into an online environment without all the issues of logistics and the things that go with that. And that line of thinking is new and fresh because...
So are you doing online shopping with offline fulfillment? Is that really what it is?
Yeah. They call it clicks and mortar.
Clicks and mortar. Oh, I like that. Did you make that up, or did that phrase already exist?
Well, I'll take a little bit of credit for it. So you can claim that.
Clicks and mortar. And so for the listener, essentially what you're saying is brick and mortar, but starting with clicks. So instead of somebody going into a store and browsing a physical shelf, they're going to go onto their phone or their iPad or their laptop or their desktop. They're going to find what they want, and then they're going to go to a place to actually make that purchase. And so where are you in this business? Have you built this out already?
Yes, we have. So I come from a background, I'll delve into it a little longer, but I built the biggest price comparison site in Africa, and we put it onto mobile. And then in 2013, we actually won the App of the Year worldwide. We were in America, got the award. Because we crossed over, you could scan a barcode in store and price compare online. We were the first guys worldwide that were doing it back in 2013. So we built this before, and then subsequent to that, we now have built it across the world. Not built it across the world. We're busy in discussions with a few places. But what's interesting is we built this model in the Maldives. Everybody's like, why the Maldives? Well, it's a great place to go to see your client. But secondly, it was a very good test bed because we were working with a telco there, a mobile phone operator. and integrated our platform with it. Why the mobile phone operator? Because then we get audience immediately. For us to be able to start a new app and for you to download an app, and that is frighteningly expensive. If you know the startup and the scale-up world, it's very expensive to get. But if you go with a large audience that is looking to capitalize and bring something to their users, it works fine. So in the Maldives right now, and this is an interesting stat, 28% of the country use our platform every day.
28% of the country uses your price comparison platform.
No, that was a long time ago. The one we do now is the one you were discussing, the clicks and mortar.
Nah? That's used by 28% of the Maldives?
Yes. 28% of the country is using our platform right now.
And how did you even get to that type of market penetration?
By using a large audience player, which was a mobile phone operator, telco.
Got it. So you went to the telco and said, we're going to make this, you guys get it into the market.
Yeah. Well, they've already got it in the market because the telco already has an app in the market. So every telco around the world has a self-service app where you check balances and buy airtime. So the whole thinking of the super kind of dynamic, like you would with WeChat and Grab and Gojek, all the things that work in Southeast Asia, we're now bringing into emerging markets and hopefully in time into established markets where you will use one app but have a multitude of solutions. So on the telco app, it opens up and it shows your mobile phone balance. You can buy airtime. But how about extending it to shopping in your immediate area? How about adding a mobile money to it? How about adding loyalty to it? It all sits within the same framework. So you're doing exactly the same thing though.
Right. It's a super app that the telco's app becomes the super app and you're building one element of that app. Was that the pitch that you made to this telco?
Man, I love how you think because you understand exactly what I'm trying to say. I wish sometimes some of the telcos will understand as easily as you do.
So the value proposition for the telco makes a lot of sense in that case because essentially they're saying, well, this is something that consumers want. If we had this, it'd be amazing. But for us to build it, it's going to be a major time investment, major capital investment. But hey, here's Andre coming along. He's already built it. Let's just pop it into our app.
100%. Exactly right.
Okay. So that's the Maldives. You have 28% market penetration. And then what happens next?
So what happens next is we're doing exactly the same. We're in discussions with telcos. And what's an interesting one are the neobanks. Because the neobanks are all looking for a differentiator. Currently, they're just a nice app sitting on top of a general banking platform.
And just to find a neobank for the listener.
Like Revolut. I'm not sure which ones are available in Canada. It would be a modern digital bank that you have a cute app or a great app that's got all kinds of interesting financial products. Revolut, N26, I'm trying to think which one is an example in the Canada or the US.
Well, market. I don't know much about the Canadian market, but there's a lot in the US. I mean, a neobank is essentially an interface that's built on top of an actual bank infrastructure, which the company doesn't own.
That's correct. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the same. And they've got large audiences and they're spending tons of money to be able to get people onto their app. And then once they've got them using this fun, funky app, they now need to start making money out of it. So either a mobile phone operator or a neobank, we deal with them. So we're in discussions with about a dozen of similar kind of businesses in Latin America, some of the big players there. The U.S. market is always, from somebody coming from outside, is always an interesting, slightly scary one. So we'll probably approach the U.S. market from somebody that will come from the U.S. and say, we know the market, let's work with you. I work very closely with investors and VCs and stuff out of Silicon Valley. I know the kind of market and the understanding what goes on there, but it's a market that we're watching very closely. What other markets we do know is Middle East, North Africa. So there are the big telcos, Ooredoo, Etisalat, Vodafone itself, we're in discussions with.
So if you go back just one second here, you started talking about telcos and using them as a channel for distribution, which works really well. Is the play with neobanks that you're going to integrate with their app in the same way?
100%, yes.
So what you're basically doing here, this is two, and maybe it's a pattern that you're going to be telling me there's 10 more of these examples, but you're going to players that have a lot of people who have already downloaded their app for a specific reason, banking, telephone service, whatever that is, and you're saying, hey, let me throw my thing into your app and we'll create a symbiotic relationship. And you've already identified two of those.
John, that's 100% correct. So the basis around that is it's very expensive nowadays to buy or get audience. We're saying the audience is already there. Let's make sure that we capitalize on them. And this is this clever thinking because if it costs me $4 to, currently it's about $4 to download an app if you charge people in marketing. That's about your cost, the cost per app download. So you're going to have a lot, a big war chest for this. I'm saying, hey, man, I can partner with the mobile phone operator that has 10 or 20 million users and switch on a shopping platform for them tomorrow.
So you've short-circuited the distribution network. You basically said, let's not bother building an audience or buying an audience. Let's just go where the audience already is. It's no different, frankly, if I'm building an app that I'm going to sell in the Salesforce App Store or on the Apple Store or on the Shopify Store. I mean, what you've done here, though, is there's not a store that exists per se. You're creating your own store. You're creating your own market and say, let's just go directly to the owner of this marketplace or this audience group, and let's go ahead and provide them with some value. How big can this get? I mean, is this something that you're going to be scaling with more telcos, more neobanks, and others?
John, if we get this right, we will become the default. And this is, you know, get this right is that big pie in the sky scenario. If I get it right, we should be the default backend for anybody that has a large audience play. The reason being, I capitalize on two aspects of them. They have the audience and they have the small businesses. That small business, like a radio station. So on a radio station, they've got 1 million downloads of their app. They've got 2 million listeners. And they've got all the small businesses that sit in their geographic area that want to have access to this audience. Why don't we just put them together? It's there.
You know, I love it.
This one I'll claim, the line is called distribution trumps innovation. That one you can put on
distribution trumps innovation. Well, of course. I mean, people have lines like content is king versus distribution is king. But I agree with you. I don't even think distribution trumps innovation. I think distribution is the innovation here. Because you could say, well, somebody else could build the app that we have. Okay, cool. But can they get the distribution deals that we have? Not bloody likely. And you've already done that.
Correct.
So what are you actually, what's holding you back from that next level of growth? Or is anything, it's just a matter of time?
John, it's the two things that you get with fast scale-ups, you know, or the term blitzscaling, is we built the model, we built the, approved the platform, and now, you know, it's the standard scale-up scenario is now you raise venture capital behind this thing, and in a big way.
So have you raised capital yet, Andre?
Ooh, little bit. Small little bit of, what's the name? You know, just a little bit of seed money, but we've self-funded most of it. We're on a raise as we speak.
And I'm guessing you have capital because you've already exited or partially exited another successful venture. Did your last one do well and it set you up financially so you have money to put into this one?
Yeah. You know, we're what's the name? I'm not flush. I'm not driving Ferraris, but I've got money to put into business. And what's the name? You know, we can carry ourselves for as long as we need to be able to make this thing work. But if you really take a look at the success of any of these big businesses in the world that kind of rewrite how dynamics is happening, now you bring in the big guns of real solid venture capital. You know, now you want to go behind 50 telcos and behind 50 challenger banks. We get that done over the next 2 years and, you know, it becomes the default platform. Because you can scale it, and there's a lot of dynamic that will get lost on an explanation here, but that you can scale this platform in such a way that it just makes sense for somebody to kind of plug it in. We've ticked all the boxes: merchant onboarding, the payments, the audience access, how the thing looks, and with a little bit of AI, and you know, one has to drop that word in, but it is true because I've optimized the. Your experience. So after about 2 or 3 months, I know what John's looking for. I know what he's shopping for. I know which areas he visits. So I'm going to change the dynamic of how the front page of this app looks to you.
Of course. So let me challenge you on the growth strategy, though. Why do you need to raise venture capital if you've already done, I mean, you've taken the one market of the Maldives, you're already getting into another channel. What's stopping you from finding other channel partners and just giving them the same piece of technology? You don't need to rebuild the technology, I assume. That's already built. And getting these deals done, I'm assuming it's you hitting the phone. So what do you need capital for?
You know, John, it's a very good point you make. You know, we hit 2 or 3 more big clients and one doesn't really need capital. I've played this game before with an interesting few businesses. And for us, it just makes it quicker and faster to be able to get there. But it's not big capital. It's not $500 million. You know, with $10 million, I changed the world.
$10 million, you think, takes this from where it is. It gives you the speed pass to get to that next level.
Oh, yeah. And you know, what's nice about it is we come from emerging market thinking. For us, $10 million is a lot of money. For venture capital, you know, for startups in established markets, that's seed money. And the beauty about it is our tech is, investment is made. The tech investment is made. So we don't have to build new tech. All of that is done. Now it's just to get distribution and sales teams out is the big thing around it. And are we going to do it without VC? That might happen. You know, we signed 2 or 3 more deals in the next couple of months and, you know, we're around there. We're not.
Yeah, but Andre, with only $10 million, how are you going to buy foosball tables and buy all the ice baths? Like, where's the money going to come from?
I'm kidding, of course.
So let me start offices.
Before, I'm not doing that again.
let me ask you this. I'd love to get into a little more of the detail here because I'm sure people are listening and saying, wow, this sounds like a tremendous accomplishment with very little capital and very little investment, frankly. So can you give us an understanding of like, what's the team like? Who's actually doing this right now? How many devs did it take to build the app? What's actually happening on the inside?
Yeah, sure. So John, myself, I was with a company called Naspers. So Naspers initially was one of the early investors into Tencent. They called it one of the best investments of all time. They put in $50,000. It's now worth about $1 billion. So a South African business that had expanded and grown around the world. So I built marketplaces. Then I headed up a company called iFlix, which was the Netflix equivalent, but for emerging markets. So that understanding of fast growth. And then my team, my co-founder is a guy called Shashank. He is ex-Nokia, so he understands the telco space, and they sit in Bangalore. And we have very senior ex-Google, ex-IBM, ex-Akamai people there, and my dev team over there are 20 people, 21 actually. And we just move fast. It's a bunch of hungry entrepreneurial thinking types that build platforms fast. There's and can deliver. We can deliver currently within 12 weeks. We can deliver a full platform.
But you're not custom building it. You've already built it, and maybe you're changing 10% to build to a new player.
We sit with 4.5 million lines of code that is written to tick all the boxes on all the spaces and all the areas. So you know, it's a lean, lean thinking, a lean team of people to be able to deliver on this.
Are you making money now? Do you have cash coming in?
Well, we got a little bit of cash coming on because we take a GMV. We've gone $400 million worth of GMV through the platform in the Maldives. And we take a percentage of the GMV that comes to us. And as we now sign up more, this starts increasing and then it becomes an exponential.
What's your percentage of the gross marketplace volume? How much do you take?
7.5%. I see your facial expression.
Quick break so I can tell you about DemandScope. DemandScope is a performance marketing agency that helps you acquire new customers, keep them hooked, and scale profitably. Google ads, Instagram ads, TikTok ads, landing pages, email, and more. There are so many ways to get customers today, but if you're not doing it right, you'll end up blowing a whole bunch of money. And that's why I launched DemandScope. We're here to make sure you're doing it right. Get more customers today and scale effectively. Learn more at demandscope.co. That's demandscope.co.
Remember, Amazon takes nearly 20%. Every other
right. Oh, no. My facial expression is that it actually is a substantial amount of money. I mean, yeah, Amazon, Apple, 20, 30%. Whereas if you're Visa or MasterCard, you're taking 0.5%, 2%. So 7.5% seems like a good number because if you could get that GMV into the billions, which doesn't seem that far off, you're talking about real money.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly where our line of thinking is. And the small business that signs up, for him to get access to 1 million new clients without any marketing spend and to make people walk through his front door. This is what he wants. He doesn't want an e-commerce store which adds 2% to his bottom line. He wants people to walk through his front door to come and buy more products. And then it makes sense.
So 400 million in GMV you mentioned, what do you think the value, if you went out to a venture capital today, what do you think the value of your business is worth right now?
We're currently playing around in the region, and valuation at this stage is so difficult, but we're looking at a valuation of pre-money of about 25 million.
Okay, 25 million. Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, valuing an early stage company is like, it's like putting your finger up and seeing which way the wind is going and it'll change, you know, in 4 minutes. So I agree with you. It's tough. So tell me, with capital or not, what does the next year look like for you? What are the next 2 or 3 markets you want to hit? If you could wave a magic wand and say, I want that player and that player, who is it?
So John, without getting into specifics, there are two. The names themselves are going to be irrelevant and not important. And also, I'd like to just keep them off the table. But we're at agreement point of two, what's the name, challenge or growth banks in the African market. So the integration with that should start in the next 2 months. There is a MVNO platform locally that we're waiting for the PO to come in. The next year to 18 months is for us to sign up a total of about 9, maybe 6 telcos or challenger banks. So it's not a big, we don't have to do 50. We do 6 and what's the name? The whole world is opening up their minds.
What does that take your GMV to?
Oh, we did the calculation. The GMV goes over $1 billion quite quickly.
It's a really cool story. I mean, I guess what I'm wondering is what markets, so you're in South Africa, you mentioned the Maldives. What markets does this go to? Does this eventually hit North America or does this stay in kind of Middle East, Africa, Asia?
So I'm going to tell you an interesting story. And you know, this is that big pie in the sky scenario. So yes, hopefully it hits America because the telcos in America and very much received in Latin America are all over the place. They've got kind of a self-service platform that doesn't work too nicely, but also the local retailer space, everybody's trying to build an e-commerce site in America and this and that, the next thing. This can consolidate and pull that all together. But our big moves are emerging markets because these emerging markets work very well for us. And you've got all these little small stores. You know, you take a look at Nigeria, it's 180 million people. And I think when I was there last, they had 8 shopping centers. Listen to that again. It's 180 million people. They've got 8 shopping centers. All the rest of retail is distributed in little home businesses and spaza shops and things like that. But they can't be digitally found except through our platform. And it becomes really interesting. The similar goes right. For Middle East, North Africa, Eastern Europe, even Southeast Asia. But Southeast Asia has WeChat and Grab and Gojek. So they kind of, you know, you've got to compete with a big player. But go where nobody is touching this market. Kenya is the same. Kenya is just as great. Ethiopia, we're in discussions with them. 150 million people there. They've got one telco, which is government run. You know, if that telco can empower every small business, all you got to do to join this is you go to the app. It takes 5 minutes for you to upload the shop details because that's all I need to do. I don't need to upload anything else.
What's interesting, as you talk about this, Andre, what's interesting is the real value proposition that I see here in the click and mortar space. So how do you make things easier for the shopper by putting everything online in a catalog? That becomes, so that's valuable if you have a lot of merchandise. If I walk into a Walmart and there's 75,000 things to pick from, if you just gave me a little catalog on my iPhone and I could find it, hey, go to aisle B4, then that makes it easier. But if you get into a situation where there is no Walmart, there's 200 mom and pop retailers. I don't even know what store to go into, let alone what shelf to go to. And now you start to amalgamate that into your app where it's a click and mortar situation. That actually is way more valuable. And that sounds like what you're describing.
It's 100% what we're describing, John, is all of those little stores, there's no way for them to currently digitally engage with anybody in his geographic area. If he has a Facebook page and people follow it, they don't know where he is. They're not walking down the street and seeing him. If a guy, you know, down the road has suddenly got, and when you come to Africa, there are guys on the side of the road that have gone to the market and got fruit and he's got a table and he sells it under a tree. That guy can take photos of it and people in his immediate area can see the photos. Hey, he's got apples again today. You know, and then scale that up into anything else. This guy's got the latest Nikes in a little mom and pop shop in the middle of Nigeria or in the middle of Mexico. It changes the dynamic of the world.
And what's interesting is Amazon's big innovation was they became the everything store online. So we're going to take everybody who wants to sell online and we're going to put them into this one website, Amazon.com. What you're talking about is let's take people who don't actually want to sell online because it doesn't make sense or it's not economical or it's not being demanded by the consumer. They don't mind walking 20 minutes and going to this store to buy something. They just don't know what store to go to. And so we're going to build the Amazon for offline transactions, not the Amazon for online transactions. It's actually so simple now that I say it out loud. Is this being done? I mean, within your market in Africa, is this a big innovation or have other people tried this?
What's fascinating about it, John, is, and you know, I'm gonna tell you, say it's a big innovation. And the reason for it is one of our big telcos tried to do this. I'd advised them earlier on, but they just built an online e-commerce store. It doesn't work. They put 1 billion rand behind it and they have hardly any engagement. Nobody's doing this. Because what's fascinating about this dynamic around it is you're getting, let's say, entrepreneurs and companies coming from established markets, America and Europe, a little bit of Asia, and they say, ooh, Africa's this massive market. Let's come in here. And, you know, Jumia is a good example and a few others. And then they build an e-commerce platform with the traditional e-commerce stuff of logistics and returns and, you know, online shops, etc. Jumia is nowhere. Their share price is in the toilet. They've closed half of their stuff down. Nobody's doing this at scale. Nobody's doing it in any way. I speak to my better half, and she's like, because we got a little video that explains how this thing works. She's like, can somebody now do this? Because all I want to do is I want to see what's in the local store. I want to know if this clothing or those shoes are available, or can I at least just speak to that store that is in my immediate geographic? You're not going to walk into a shopping center and know what's on special in the shopping center without having to walk through every single store.
So one of the questions you asked when I asked originally, what can I help you with? You said, how do we take a better message out to the small and medium enterprise and retail markets? What message do you have now? Are you talking about the small retailers, or are you talking about the consumers in this case?
But John, what's the name? I think through our dialogue, that question has changed a little. The message is more towards the large audience player to say, this platform is available and you've got all the pieces of the puzzle. How do we get the message to you better? And the small merchant will come. The small merchant, because if he has suddenly got access to all the audience of the telco or the mobile phone operator, or he's got access to the audience of the radio station, or he's got access to the audience of the neobank, it's a very easy decision for him to say, I'll just join that. It's going to cost me nothing, and I'll only pay for traffic that comes through my door. It's a win-win.
Well, let me ask you this. Are you using the small businesses as promotional vehicles? Because what I'm seeing here is if you actually have a street full of vendors or small businesses with windows that have signs in them that say open and close, why not have them put a badge in their window, a printout, a laminate, whatever it is? Hey, we are part of this network. We're part of this platform. So you start getting that in real life visibility, and then the neighbor stores are going to come look and say, hey, what platform are you a part of? How do I become a part of that? Is that something that you thought of?
John, we played around with that idea because it makes sense. So you've got MasterCard, Visa, but because we are a white label, you would then put the telco or the neobank's logo there. So I'm part of the Vodafone network. You know, so it becomes an interesting, where do you play that? So these are interesting business decisions and choices that you do. Is the telco, does a small store want to say I'm on that telco's platform or not? Ideally, probably they do. But, these are marketing answers that need to be answered at the time. Because the interesting dynamic around your question is, what do we think about that question and say, why do I do that? Well, it's to get more people in the app. I don't need more people on the app. They're already there. I have 20 million people using a self-service app on a telco.
I hear you. And this is, I'm trying to Google the term for it. I can't remember it offhand, but there's a marketing term for this. What you essentially need to do is build a B2B brand that has recognition with the consumer. So this actually isn't that different from a lot of payment companies, certainly Visa, MasterCard, American Express, Stripe. I mean, these are platforms that actually don't ever touch the consumer. Visa is a brand that works with banks, and then consumers know the brand, but the relationship is not with Visa. The relationship is with your bank when you use your Visa card. In this case, but the trust factor, in fact, I believe Visa is one of the most trusted brands in the world for this reason. The trust factor is you need to piggyback off all of the front-facing brands, whether it's the retail store, whether it's Vodafone, whether it's that telco in the Maldives, whether it's the neobank, and you need to make it a part of your agreements. If I were you, if I were running marketing for your company, I'd be saying, let's get into our contracts that anytime you work with us, one of the requirements is that you put our brand name, our consumer-facing brand name, next to your logo. So whatever that consumer-facing name is, it could be your current name or it could be a new name, but it becomes Vodafone X, AT&T X. Go ahead.
I think, John, all you do, when you switch on Instagram or Facebook right now, it says by Meta, just as it opened, and then it goes away.
Exactly.
So exactly that. So you're 100% right there.
It's just, but it's not going to go away. It's going to stay there in your case. because the reason is that you're actually creating value. It's not you're just a name that's taking up space on the page. You're not just taking up pixels. You're creating value and trust with the consumer. Now, here's the reality. The first partner you ask that of is actually going to go out on a limb for you and do you a big favor. They're going to do you a solid. So maybe you got to give them something back in return. By the time you're on the fifth, ninth, 12th partner, your name becomes equity that's actually more valuable to them. Like, why should I trust your store service? Oh, it's these guys. I know them. I've seen them around before.
You should come work for me. I love the way that you look at things, because the bigger picture value around this thing, John, is fascinating, because the real value lies in merchant, in the ownership of the merchant. So the merchant onboarding comes through my platform, okay? And it happens on the telco or on the bank's app. But the merchant's dashboard sits on my side. I pay the merchant. So the payment happens from me. So what we also have is we have a merchant app. Now, the merchant app is not branded to the telco. The merchant app is branded Flood. So what you could do in time is, as we increase more audience distribution, all you got to do is download the Flood app and you will appear on the most local and closest platform that's near you. And everybody wins in this thing. But
I got it. So you actually become the front-facing consumer app.
Yeah, the consumer app is the telco or the bank.
But if you search Flood, if I'm sitting in the Maldives and I do a search for Flood, I'm saying in your ideal situation, you would find that local carrier.
Yes. Yeah. So, or on the local carrier, they would just have the little Flood logo at the bottom that, you know, we're Flood empowered. Like, you know, we accept Visa, MasterCard. Oh, and we've also got the Flood platform is here. So you can find all the merchants in your immediate area.
So is this something, Andre, that you're doing right now at all? Are you presenting your brand to the consumers at all today?
No, Flood is not consumer facing at all.
All right. Well, I'd be, you install a head of marketing today. That's step number one. You've got to build a consumer facing brand, because here's the reality. You've already hacked distribution. You've already done something that most business owners can only dream of. You've actually built a distribution network and you're getting it done. Like you said, if you can get 6, 9 on board, that's $1 billion GMV marketplace that you've built, that you're taking 7.5% of. So that's a great business right there. You throw a brand onto this, you increase your valuation substantially, and it's not really going to cost you any more money.
No, 100% correct. You know, we're just not the I've burned my fingers off creating a brand, so I'm a little bit weary of it until it's time to do it. So it's there, but you know, to go out then, because and confusing thing to telco is the guy that you deal with at the telco is used to selling airtime. So it takes a little bit of time for these guys to get the idea. When they do, they also need to understand it's not that you don't download a Flood app. People don't download something new. We're just using your platform. And they're like, huh?
It's powered by Flood.
But then the powered by Flood sits within the platform. So as you open up it, it says powered by Flood.
I totally get it. I think that's a change I'd recommend making sooner than later, because like I said, from a valuation standpoint, but forget paper valuations, from an actual equity, consumer equity standpoint, this is way more valuable, and you build a much stronger moat when you have a brand that people know and recognize. The value of the brand Stripe, the value of the brand Visa, the value of the brand Coca-Cola, there's more value in those brand names than probably in the product themselves.
Yeah, you know, you raise a thing. Sometimes we get stuck with the woods for the trees scenario, you know, where I'm trying to get all these things. And I said, you know, some of the things fall through the crack a little.
Andre, I love it. I think you're really onto something here. I think you know that also. And I can't wait to hear where this goes.
Keep an eye on us, John. I love speaking to guys like yourself, you know, that kind of, wait a minute, I can see this. And that excites us, because we can see it and we understand it. And I know this is the platform itself is going to change the world. If I get it right. And I will. I've done it before. So, you know, this is how we build things. I've come from a background of this. And it excites me when people understand and get this. And, you know, next week we'll be at Mobile World Congress in Barcelona. So, you know, we're going to have a lot of discussions with a lot of telcos. And slowly but surely, the people, you know, the guys are coming across the line. And it's like, wait a minute, this should work. And this is where this clicks and mortar is a term that is starting to wake up. And I'm like, I was there before.
You heard it here on Making It. Clicks and mortar. Andre is going to change the world with Flood. Can't wait to see it happen. Thanks so much, Andre. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to leave a rating or a review on Apple and Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Helps other people find the show, and it lets us know that we're doing something right.